You're listening to the ESP, the European Skeptics Podcast, an independent weekly show set up to bring you news, interesting topics and interviews with people mostly from Europe, building bridges and breaking down language barriers to show the world how active and awesome the skeptical movement is in the region. This is episode 373. I'm your host, András Pinter, and joining me for the show is Pontus Böckmann. See ya!
Hey-san, András!
Yes.
Where are you?
Yeah. Wait a second.
Don't know. When are you? It's early in the morning for you, late at night for me.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, right.
So we found a compromise in terms of when to record, and I appreciate that. Well, give me a second to get my thoughts together at this
we'll
very
figure
early
it out
hour.
Somehow. Yes.
Yeah, so if I'm not mistaken, I'm in Malaysia at the moment.
Okay, good. Good guess.
Still in Malaysia, yes.
Your guess is as good as mine.
On the island of Penang. Near Georgetown.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, in a couple of days' time, I'll be going to Singapore.
Mm-hmm. Annika, on the other hand, she is missing today. But we had to compromise a little bit to get something together here. And, well,
yeah,
we made a choice.
Yes. Yeah, but at least we have you as the go-to guy to be.
Yeah, well, you don't
to
get
be
rid
there
of me
all the time.
No, you can't get rid
no,
of
no,
me.
No.
I'm here whether you want it or not. So good, but it's good to have you back, András.
Thank you. I haven't listened to the latest episode, but of course I haven't had enough time to do that.
No, it was very good.
But I will. Say, yeah. I will definitely. Okay. I will definitely listen to you on the plane. This is why I don't know if. You had any word of the week or who's quacking that we called for earlier?
No, we didn't. We welcome that, people. Please send in your word of the week or who's quacking to us. So, word of the week, András, what is that?
So, word of the week would be something that is commonly used in a certain language in one of the countries of Europe that we don't necessarily know the meaning of outside of that country. Obviously, something related to skepticism is what we're after here. Mm. So, we would like to hear our listeners pronounce something that is commonly used in skepticism or related to skeptical topics in their own countries, but it's not obvious what the meaning of it is to anyone else who doesn't speak the language.
Right. And if you can explain a little bit about when it's used and what it means, that, of course, helps a lot.
The other thing that we're looking for is who's quacking. And who's quacking is about someone, a person in your country, who peddles pseudoscience or some kind of weird ideas, and not necessarily known outside the country. And if you could send us a recording of that person saying something very weird, explaining what that is in your language, that would be really good.
Yeah.
And the reason for this, why we would like to do this, is because we want to serve our listeners a lot of interesting stuff going on in Europe.
Right.
And since this is the European Skeptics Podcast, we would like to emphasize how culturally and linguistically diverse the European community of skeptics is, because we have lots of different countries speaking lots of different languages, and that is an amazing asset for all of us.
The fundamental reason for this show is really for us to learn within Europe what's going on in the other countries, that things that
correct.
We don't hear about because it's not in English, it doesn't make the international news.
Yeah.
That is what we want to do. But of course, if you want to send something from Brazil, Lula da Silva has said something really stupid or crazy, send that too. We are open to anything. I mean, at least he's talking Portuguese, and that's sort of a European language, right? It's not sort of. It is a European language.
It is a European language. Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it has a lot to do with the places that I visited in the last couple of years, a couple of days.
So it seems like years, though.
Yeah. Well, it's all floating as the memories of different distance in the past to me, because I've been doing these tours one after the other. So now I'm at my third tour to Malaysia and Singapore. And these tours last 15 days. And occasionally, I don't even know whether I have already talked about something that I usually talk about, or it was the previous tour. So I end up talking about everything and sometimes, repeating myself. But it's better than leaving something out.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, but there is something that we definitely won't leave out, and that is the segment of the show that we call This Week in Skeptical History, also known as Twitch.
Yes, we missed it last week because you weren't there.
And since there has been a bit of a UFO craze in the last, well, couple of months or even years, because it started sometime around 2020, I'm talking about the Pentagon UFO documents and all that. But we must not forget that UFO sightings are not restricted to the United States. Even though that is what it appears like to people around the world because of the amount of reporting and all that. One of the really interesting kinds of UFO sightings happened in 1969 on the 12th of April in Pori in Finland, where there was a military training exercise at Pori Airport. The Finnish Defence Forces was holding this jet training mission for a very interesting plane. It's called a Fokker CM-170 Magister. And it was developed by a French company in the 1950s. So it was a relatively new aircraft at the time. And a couple of pilots in training were flying these aircraft. And they were told by a flight controller at the airport to investigate a couple of interesting things that they see in the radar. Now, they were told to investigate air balloons that were floating above the airport. And one of the first questions that I have about this incident is how did the flight controller know that it was air balloons? Because then, after they started flying a little bit closer to investigate what that was, the objects started to move, according to the pilots in training, in a very weird fashion at very high speeds. So speed so high that more than 200 kilometers further north from Pori, in a place called Vaasa, I'm not sure I pronounced the name properly.
Sounds right, yeah.
But yeah, they were also reported. So the amount of evidence is basically at this level. So this is what we know about the whole thing. And this is what makes it, in my eye at least, very, very interesting and a very intriguing one, because we don't know anything else about this incident. Obviously, a couple of magazines reported on it, and these two people were pilots in training, mind you. So they did not have the amount of experience as to what phenomena you can see and come across up in the skies. So this could have been some kind of a weird optical phenomenon that fooled both of them, because there were two pilots. One of them was called Tarmo Tukeva. Also don't know whether I pronounce the name properly, or the other person, Jouko Kuronen. But the latter person just overheard a radio conversation. So it was after that he went after the phenomenon. So, yeah. Why I find it really intriguing is because we have no idea what they were. Kind of a mystery.
Probably Martians. That's my professional probably assessment.
Mm-hmm. I think it's as good as anyone else's assessment of the situation. It's just something that is very unlikely. So obviously we do know that at least Occam's razor should be applied here. But it happened on the 12th of April, 1969. So this week marks the 54th anniversary of that incident.
Yeah, some time mm-hmm. ago.
Yeah, it's not a problem that we have no idea, right? Mm. This is just something that keeps it being a UFO.
That's right. The difference between a skeptic and a not a skeptic is that we don't know, therefore it must have been aliens.
Yeah, that is not the skeptical approach.
No, that's not the skeptical approach. The skeptical approach is, it's fine to say, we don't know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Boring, but true.
Well, I wouldn't even say boring. It's kind of interesting. It is kind of interesting.
It doesn't make the headlines, though.
Yes. We don't know, but that's fine. Imagine that as a headline.
Yeah. Could be the name of this episode. Yeah.
Oh, we don't know, but that's fine. Yeah, I would like that. Okay, so that was our This Week in Skeptical History or Twitch. But I'm wondering if, Pontus, you have something to poke the Pope for.
Well, yes and no, because this is a very special edition of Pontus Pokes the Pope. It's not actually a poking of the Pope. It's more of a film recommendation. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, of course, I have seen a very new documentary called The Pope Answers, and it is a Spanish production, also uh-huh. known as Amen, Francisco Responde, some sort of Spanish I'm trying to fake there.
Yeah.
It shows a meeting of about 10 young people or so with Francis. So they all are invited to have a private session with Francis. It's very intimate, and they have about an hour of interaction with him where they can ask him anything really and discuss difficult and sensitive topics. And these 10 people are all between, I would say, between 20 and 25 years old. And during this documentary, you learn gradually that they all have their individual edge. So we have one Catholic feminist who is pro-choice. So that's interesting. There's one very conservative Catholic girl who's pro-life. And there's one man who was abused as a child by a priest. There's a Muslim man. There is a woman who creates adult content on social media. And I can tell you that Francis was a little bit shocked to hear about that. I don't think he was prepared for that one. And there's a non-binary person, and there's a 25-year-old ex-nun, no longer a believer, obviously gay. So very, very different people than what Francis probably normally meets in mass or wherever. And I don't want to spoil it, but they ask Frankie very, very good questions and very edgy questions from their respective positions. So we hear about abortion, abuse, losing faith, producing pornography, of course. And I must hand it to these people because they're obviously a bit nervous. You can hear about that before they meet the Pope as well. But they're very, very open and brave to address these rather difficult things with the Pope. Come on, even I would have been a little bit nervous. And they really challenge him. And I have to say also that I do respect Frankie for the way he handled this. And the respect that he shows for each of them. As I mentioned, he was visibly shocked when one of the women described how she creates pornography for money, live, on demand, on social media. But he takes this as well as you could actually expect him to. Don't get me wrong, because a lot of the answers that we hear from him are the things that we have heard before. And some of them are very, very appalling, to me at least. They're very, very contrary to my own position, his position on abortion. And he has clearly no idea how pregnancy works. That's obvious. From how he replies, he has very, very dogmatic, he even uses the word dogma himself, dogmatic views on women in the church. Can a woman mm-hmm. be a priest? He blankly said, no, that's dogma, cannot happen, will never happen. But very, very interesting, and you get to know these young people very well as well. Not very well, but you understand where they're coming from, and they are very, very honest in how they speak and the questions they put. So I do recommend it to everyone to see if you can. As I said, Frankie takes this all very well. There's one person in the documentary who is very, very unhappy, and that is the conservative Catholic girl. She's absolutely horrified with what she hears from the others. But Frankie does well, I think. So go see it. You can find it on Disney Plus if you have that. That's in Europe. You can see it on Disney Plus. If you're in the US, I believe you can see it on Hulu. And maybe there are other ways to see it as well. But very interesting, I would have to say.
All right. Well, I might try and watch it myself.
It's about an hour, 20 minutes or so. And I think it's worth it, very much so. It's very well produced as well. I think they did a very good job in doing that, and I recommend it.
Thank you very much, Pontus.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads us to the news.
Oh, Macchiarini, when will we see the last of you? I have talked about the terrible research misconduct of the Swiss-Italian surgeon Paolo Macarini so many times that I don't know if I need to reintroduce him to our listeners. But in case you're a new listener,
yeah.
This is the gist of it. Paolo Macarini did execute experimental surgery on a number of patients under the false premise that the procedure that he had invented had also already succeeded in animals. The procedure was to replace the trachea on patients who had lost the function of the trachea due to illness or injury. So the trachea is in your throat. So if it doesn't, if there's a big problem there, you cannot breathe. So it's very serious. And Macchiarini used, at least in the later, most of the cases, he used artificial tracheas, plastic ones or something like that, that he covered with stem cells from the patient itself, him or herself. And that was to stop the body from rejecting these new plastic tracheas. Turned out he had never managed to do this in any animal. He had falsified or misrepresented his research, and it just didn't work. And Wikipedia now lists 12 patients that he operated on between 2008 and 2014, and only one is known to still be alive. Not well, I should say, but she's, or he, I can't remember, but that person is still alive, but not cured, if you will. Now, inexplicably, some of Macchiarini's published papers, so-called research papers, have not yet been retracted. But earlier this month, Retraction Watch published the news of one more finally being taken down. This was published in 2015, so that's after the last surgery, and it was published in the journal called Respiration. Already in 2018, Karolinska Institutet, where some of the operations took place, they sent a letter to the journal asking them to retract the paper. And they, because they said the research, quote, lacked any biological hypothesis, end quote. And they also said that there was no discussion to be found in the paper regarding any risks. There was no theory behind the procedure, no studies demonstrating effect or safety, and no discussions on why the experimental treatment, that is their words, experimental treatment, was continued in this particular case. When the patient's...
No red flags there.
No red flags there, no. The patient's condition was deteriorated. So it was all bad. But for some reason, 5 years later, the journal was still having this paper in their database. But now, for some reason, they have changed their minds and it has now been retracted. In the meanwhile, as we know, Macchiarini is still out there. He has not lost his medical license. And the last we heard, we talked about it a couple of months ago, I can't recall. But he's still practicing as a surgeon in Spain. So, terrible scandal, the whole thing.
Yeah, I think he's so deep in this that he will probably not come out saying that, yeah, I was wrong, sorry about all that, and I'll try. So he's just digging himself deeper into this by keeping up practice.
But it is strange that he hasn't been punished for any of this. He was just, As I said, I've said this before, somebody should take away his scalpel.
That would be the least that were something that should be done. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Speaking of interesting research... Well, we've been talking about another thing for a long, long time, and that is COVID-19, and especially the origins of COVID, and especially with the United States FBI and Department of Energy claiming that the most likely scenario is a lab leak for the origin of the virus. And then new evidence turning up about how raccoon dogs could be the ones with the spillover effect. That is very interesting, but there was a piece of evidence, a large chunk of the evidence that would have been necessary to assess the situation from the market, the Huanan Seafood and Wildlife Market, because it was immediately closed at the beginning of the pandemic. And evidence that was gathered by Chinese authorities was not available to anyone. And now, almost 3 years later, it has been published.
Oh, they found it, eventually.
Yeah. Ooh, oh, where did we put it? Oh, my God. Where could it be? Obviously, there is a little bit of a suspicion going on regarding the fact that it was held back for a while by Chinese authorities. But now it's been published by a group of Chinese researchers. The research was concerning the situation after the closure of the Huanan seafood market. And 923 samples were worked with that were collected from the whole environment. And by that, I mean that it wasn't only animals, but there were 18 species of animals that were used in this piece of research. And contents of refrigerators, unsold contents, obviously they were all, everything was halted at the beginning. And they collected a couple of stray animals that they took swabs from, along with a couple of fish that were held in fish tanks. So it was quite a thorough kind of sample collection, if I can say so. So the animals that were examined for SARS-CoV-2 samples, I shouldn't say COVID, but it was SARS-CoV-2 that they were looking for. Could be pronounced SARS-CoV-2 or SARS-CoV-2. Yeah, mm-hmm. So and it's the virus itself. But the results are very interesting. The results show that the environmental samples gained a lot of positive data. 73 environmental samples contained SARS-CoV-2. But with the animal samples collected from the stray animals, none of the viruses could be found.
Mm.
That means that the virus was present in the environment, but the stray animals didn't catch it. So it still doesn't show, it's not that's like a smoking gun evidence of how it could have jumped from one animal to the other. But since it was present in the environment, it must have been present in some of the animals sold at the market. But obviously, most of the animals sold in the market were already sold by the time it was all closed. So we still don't know. But this large amount of data for 923 samples altogether, this can be used. These are accessible to the research community. So this is a very important piece of the puzzle that is finding out how this whole pandemic started.
Yeah.
So,
It still sounds like the most obvious way of getting the virus into the human population through some sort of animal. And we know that they had these famous, now famous, raccoon dogs there.
Yeah.
And we know that they can be infected by the virus. We just haven't found the specimen of just that particular raccoon dog who had the virus in them at that point, but it's very plausible, I would say.
If the environmental samples contain viruses, and in three cases, even live viruses capable of infecting cells, could be found. So if that is the case, it must have been coming from infected animal, a person. We don't know, but it has had to be about shedding viruses in some way. Mm-hmm. So, we are a little bit closer to understanding that it was there. It doesn't necessarily mean that the lab leak theory has to go down the drain. It's still there. We cannot definitely prove that it wasn't a lab leak, but we are one step closer to understanding how it could have been just a spillover from animals.
Hmm. All right. So I have AI news again. AI is, of course, in the news all the time now. But as many of you will know, Microsoft has integrated the AI from ChatGPT into Bing, which is interesting. You can now have written discussions with Bing or ask Bing for questions. I did ask Bing about the Macchiarini case or about tell me about Paolo Macchiarini, I asked, and I got a reasonably good reply. So it's sort of working. I'm not the only one playing around with this. Of course, a journalist in Sweden tested the software by asking questions about quote-unquote certain topics, which he had heard could generate unfortunate replies. Well, unfortunately for me, he didn't say exactly what topics that was, but it will become apparent soon what kind of area it was. The result was that after a couple of iterations, Bing happily started to refer to articles published by a Nazi online so-called newspaper called Nordfront. It's a Swedish online paper, if you call it that. He asked Bing about Nordfront and he got this reply, quote, Nordfront.se is a non-partisan online magazine that writes about news and other material. They also write other texts that they hope will be informative and inspiring, end quote. A little bit too neutral for my taste. And that is, even though Bing apparently is aware who is behind Nordfront, that is something called the Nordic Resistance Movement, or NMR, as they are known in Sweden. You can understand what kind of an organization that is. They are classified by the Swedish Secret Service as the most dangerous neo-Nazi organization in Sweden. So this journalist asked about NMR, what is NMR? And he got this reply, quote, "The political will of the Nordic Resistance Movement is summarized in 9 program points. These points contain the most important measures that the Nordic Resistance Movement will take when power is taken back from the hostile forces that now rule the Nordic peoples," end quote. Okay, so there are apparently hostile forces that now rule the Nordic peoples. Hello, I was not aware. Yeah, not entirely. And the problem, of course, is when you get a reply that seems so clinically objective, and it is really not, then, that's a problem. So Linus Larsson is the name of this journalist. He reported this to Microsoft, and it seems that they now have put in some kind of block specifically regarding Nordfront and NMR. But that was probably a quick and dirty fix. You know, please don't take them seriously. But how do we know that this AI is not reporting other things just as credulously as it did about the first thing? Yeah, so there are still reasons to believe that Bing can spread misinformation about anything. So please take Bing with a grain of salt.
Yeah, yeah. Or anything else. It looks like one of the most important parts of an algorithm that could make an AI or a chatbot reliable is critical thinking skills. So somehow the algorithm should include that. But it's definitely a challenge.
We know most people have a problem with that one. So asking that from artificial intelligence is maybe too much.
Oh, yes, that's correct, especially since we know that there's a lot of research going on in order to understand how people get into believing stuff, especially conspiracy theories, because that can affect our decisions, that can affect our social phenomena, our social cohesion as well could be destroyed by that. So yeah, these pieces of research are very, very important. And we know that some of that research has been compiled and showed in publications readily available to the public, like the Debunking Handbook 2020.
Oh yes.
That was done by a team of amazing researchers from social psychology and sociology and all that. The Debunking Handbook provides, for example, a couple of ideas as to how to tackle conspiracy beliefs and how to try to reduce the level of belief in some weird ideas. This is why a team of Irish researchers set out to assess what the current science says about how to approach conspiracy beliefs. They analyzed 25 studies, and more than 7,000 people were included in all those studies. And they assess the efficacy of the interventions in terms of how they can change conspiracy beliefs. They included a lot of different conspiracies, ranging from the 1969 moon landing being talked about as a hoax, to COVID-19 conspiracies, and cancer-related conspiracies and all that. So the difference lies there, first of all, but also in the techniques used in trying to reduce those conspiracy beliefs. So the results show that reducing conspiracy beliefs is really hard work because the usual techniques that we kind of intuitively think would work do not work. So they can even strengthen the conspiracy belief if we don't approach it the right way. That is, of course, the backfiring effect. And they found that it is actually there. So if we don't approach this the right way, we could have the situation even worsened. That is why they came up with an overview of the practical parts of that could be. They said, try to avoid appealing to emotions. It can easily backfire. Don't do that. And don't just publish counterarguments because they not seem to be effective. And this is my favorite part. The third point is prevention is the best cure. So we are back to the inoculation theory and we are back to the pre-bunking of everything. It is not surprising at all, but this paper, being a systematic review of the currently available evidence, reinforces our need to approach it from that end. So pre-bunking, 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 do the inoculation, do teach people critical thinking skills. And you can do that through examples of certain conspiracy theories. And if they haven't yet been exposed to those theories, they could apply the skills that they learn about them to the new ones that they come across. Exactly how a vaccine works. Yeah, it's good to see that we can be increasingly sure of that being effective.
Mm. All right. So, climate change, Andras.
Is there something like that going on?
Apparently.
So I've heard.
We'll hear about this now. So Science Daily reports of a new analysis from Chalmers University of Technology in Gothenburg. So it's a Swedish report. They looked into where we're likely heading when it comes to the rising temperatures of the Earth. They concluded that we are likely to miss the 2 degrees increase of the Paris Agreement. The main reason, they say, is that the phasing out of coal is too slow. They point to China and India, but also other countries, who absolutely need to follow what they have promised. But also see that, not surprisingly, some states in Europe have delayed their plans due to the war in Ukraine. So we have different things working against us here. They do point to the UK as an example, where they say that in the UK, the phasing out is actually the fastest that ever happened in a large country. And I didn't know that. That's good news. And it shows that it is possible to be quicker than most other countries are. These scientists now say that UK should be an example for example, Germany, who is not moving fast enough.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So they're going, it's a balanced report, but what they say is it's not really unrealistic to keep to the 2 degrees increase if everybody did what they need to do and what they promised to do. They say, though, that we can't count on that. Probably we are moving towards an increase around 2.5 or 3 degrees Celsius, and that's bad enough. We should be worried. We all are worried, but that's where we're heading.
Yeah, and being that's the problem, that everyone is worried, but being worried is not enough. We have to act. So
that's true.
That's the difference.
That's true.
The difference. Because even politicians are worried, I'm pretty sure. It's just...
They're very worried about their voting numbers, I think.
Yeah, well, in some countries, they have all the reason to. Yeah. Yeah, poor Sanna Marin.
Yeah.
In Finland. And poor Finland, because that means that, I mean, they're not poor, but per se. But the rising of certain ideas is concerning. And in some countries, it's really
happening. Yeah, we have to poke the politicians in more than one country now. Yeah, or we have been in the past as well. But more and more countries seem to be leaning right-wing extremist.
Yeah, and just to avoid any misconceptions about this, we are not against being right-wing politicians and or being right-wing in politics. It's fine as long as you don't push it to the extreme and you don't try to weed out everything else.
Right.
Yeah, this is what these extremist forces tend to do. And first, there's, we know a couple of places in Europe, including Sweden, where there is an emergence of that. And now Finland. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
All right. So this is what we have to deal with instead of actually dealing with climate science and dealing with the climate change. Yeah, so fuck politics. So thank you very much. But there is also one more thing to find out, and that is who's been really wrong lately.
So, yes, welcome. I will be your Annika tonight, and I will bring you a German story that some people compared to an April Fool's item, but it unfortunately is true. So, short background. Some cities in Germany, and I think also elsewhere, have implemented city-wide Wi-Fi networks as a public service, I guess, to compensate for poor internet infrastructure in general. So it's a very good initiative, I think. In the modern era, internet is vital for daily life, a necessity, if you will. So good on them for doing that. But as we know, there is also a lot of misinformation out there regarding radio waves and of different kinds. There's been a lot of baseless fear-mongering regarding 5G, for instance. In two cities in the very south of Germany, in the area known as Swabia, or Schwaben, such misinformation has apparently been spread, and politicians have listened to this. There's an initiative there that's called, hold on now, because Annika is not here, but I'll do my best. It's called Verantwortungsvoller Mobilfunk. I'm standing by that. That's what it says on my paper here. Google Translate tells me that that means something like responsible mobile communications, which sounds impressive, but...
I mean, it makes some sense, but...
yes. So, as a response to pressure from this movement, two cities, and here we go again, Wangen im Allgäu and Ravensburg, they have decided to kill the network at night, this public Wi-Fi network, every night to, quote-unquote, protect the public.
From what?
Yeah, from what? That's the question. So this Responsible Mobile Communications Initiative, they are, of course, very happy, and they claim that numerous studies have shown that Wi-Fi poses health risks. That's not true. I mean, there are a few studies that do show this, but if you look at well-controlled studies, you cannot find any link between being exposed to Wi-Fi and having health problems. There's no known mechanism to explain why or how Wi-Fi could be dangerous. So it's nonsense. And these two cities, they should know better. So, to cut to the chase, for falling for fear-mongering pseudoscience, these two cities, Wangen am Allgäu and Ravensburg, they get today's prize for being really wrong.
And unfortunately, they deserve it very well. So it's a well-deserved prize.
Yeah. And it's not just, I mean, you could say, what's the harm? Well, maybe you cut the internet access at night when maybe not too many people are depending on it. But what it does is that it helps legitimizing these fear-mongering, and people say, oh, if they cut it down because of safety concerns,
there must be something to it.
Yeah. And this so-called electro-hypersensitivity is not a thing. When you test it in laboratory environments, you can't find that effect. But still, apparently, as I read, about 2% of the German population, they believe that they are suffering from electrohypersensitivity. And they may have problems and they may need help. But it's not because they are exposed to electromagnetic fields, because that is harmless.
Yeah. It could be because they are exposed to a couple of things that have to do with electricity, like, I mean, handheld devices that they spend most of their time on instead of sleeping, for example. That could lead to serious health effects. But it's not about the electricity itself. It's about the content. It's about what you focus on. It's about how much sleep and how much rest you get. Yeah, but it's easier to try and blame it all on something.
If you don't feel
that.
Well, you want to blame it on something. That's very natural. But it's very telling that there are reports from way back when you switched from natural pens. When I mean pens, I mean feathers from birds. When you wrote with those quills, that's what I'm talking about. Quills. When you went from quills to steel pens. Mm-hmm. People reported feeling ill because of that. So it is the same concept. You have certain generic problems. You have headaches, you have stiff neck, and you want to blame it on something. And you believe it is the latest technology. And
yes, plus you don't understand what the technology entails and what it's all about. Because
fear of the unknown, yes.
Exactly. And all you hear is that it's electromagnetic radiation. And once you hear the word radiation, you're
thinking Chernobyl
or something. Yes, exactly. So electromagnetic radiation is just one of the most natural things because it happens all over nature. Can't avoid it. But the freaking light is electromagnetic radiation. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a whole lot of things that lead people to dismissing something like Wi-Fi. Okay. Thank you very much, Pontus.
Thank you.
And I'll be Annika as well this week. So yeah, we are sitting in for Annika for the quote as well to finish the episode on. Actually, I found a quote from Pierre Teilhard de Chardin.
Olé.
Who's
wrong country. Who's
it was France, actually.
Vive la France.
Vive la France. He was a French Jesuit priest and a scientist, a paleontologist. Not without the controversy regarding his writings. But he said something very important, and that is, we have gone a long way towards solving a problem when we are able to formulate it.
Yes, very, very true. It's been said many times that 90% of solving a problem is define it. You know what the problem is. If you don't know what the problem is, you will never solve it.
Exactly. And the first step towards that is admitting there is a problem.
Okay. That's step one. You have a problem.
That's step one.
But then defining what the problem is.
Yes.
Yes. Then you are...
Without that, there is no hope to solve it.
Yeah, without that, you're stuck. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but we are not stuck. We are out in a second because this episode has to conclude, but we'll be back soon. So, Pontus, thank you very much for allowing me to join you today.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for letting me be here. Yeah.
Thanks for standing around and being there all the time. You're the most reliable part of this team. And many thanks to our listeners as well for being so reliable in tuning in. Please keep doing so. And until next week, goodbye.
Hey do.
Bis lad. Tschüss.
Tschüss.
This has been your ESP experience. The show is produced and recorded by the ESP.eu. Join us again next time, but until then, please send your feedback, comments, or death threats to info@theesp.eu. We would also love to hear your ideas and suggestions regarding future episodes, as well as news from your country of residence that might interest others across the continent. If you have a local event or organization to promote, please don't hesitate to let us know, as we are more than happy to help. All music in the program was written and performed by Keisha J. Gray and George Schraub and is used with their permission. Please check out our webpage at www.theesp.eu, follow us on Twitter at espodcast_eu, and like us on Facebook.
I don't know how you can believe.
Ooh, I was quick.
Oh, you wanted to segue. That is much longer than
no. I was taking a sip, and I wasn't prepared. Anyway,
it's a good thing it's an edited show.
Too early for you, I guess, to take a sip.
No. I've been taking sips myself, and I might as well.
Well, yeah, non-alcoholic, I believe. Well, don't say. I mean, I'm not judging.
All right. It would be interesting to start drinking at 5 in the morning.
Yeah. Operations took place. Place took place.
Place. That was a little Sean Connery like.
It's late here.
Okay, sorry.
Took place. A necessity. A necessity.
This is going to be a nightmare for you to edit.
It'll be. Yeah, I'll cut most of it out, so no worries.